Good afternoon. My name is Ann Cavall, and on behalf of the Breast Cancer Education Association Board and volunteers, I welcome you to the BCEA webinar education series. I encourage you to grab a pen and paper, as there will be plenty of good information shared in the next hour. We do have participants joining us in two ways, via webcast or by phone. For those connected via webcast, please follow along with the slideshow on your screen. Also, for those connected via the webcast, you should see a box to the left of the slides where you'll be able to submit questions during the Q&A portion near the end of the session. And really, if you have questions throughout the webinar, just go ahead and post them, and we'll address them as we can. In 2017, the BCEA will continue to expand our mission and provide frequent breast cancer educational resources that are easy to access. This year's educational programming promises to encourage, empower, and engage our community in a variety of ways, including webinars such as this one, offered throughout the year, our signature Education Focus Fall Conference that will be held on Saturday, October 7th, 2017, at the Ties Conference Center in St. Paul near the Minnesota State Fairgrounds, and increased ongoing resources on our website and social media channels available 24/7. If you were unable to attend three webinars that were presented in 2016, recordings of these sessions are available on the BCEA website at www.breastcancereducation.org under the webinar tab. This is a great way to easily access valuable information, all at your convenience. If you have not done so already, please be sure to connect with us on social media. We regularly share and foster discussion on the latest news and resources in breast cancer education, diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. We also encourage you to share what you learned today using the hashtag BCEAWebinar. Please also be sure to keep your eye out for more information on our next webinar, tentatively set for May 23rd, 2017. Other tentative 2017 webinar dates are August 15th and November 14th. We will share specific information on upcoming webinars as soon as complete details are available. And now I'd like to introduce the speaker for today's webinar, Keith Knutson, PhD. Dr. Keith Knutson is currently professor in the Department of Immunology at Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida, and is the director of the Mayo Clinic Florida Cancer Research Program. He received his PhD from the University of Georgia in Physiology and Pharmacology in 1995 and completed two postdoctoral fellowships in immunology, one at the University of British Columbia and the other at the University of Washington. He was a 2004 recipient of the Howard Temin Award from the National Cancer Institute. Dr. Knutson's current interests and research focuses on the immunology and immunotherapy of breast and ovarian cancers. Interests are in both the basic immunobiology and clinical translation, including clinical trials. The laboratory conducts research on cancer vaccine, focuses on augmenting T-cell immunity using peptide and virus-based vaccines. These vaccine strategies are primarily aimed at preventing the patients from relapsing after optimal conventional therapies. Welcome, Keith Knutson.
Thank you, Anne. It's great to be here, and thank you to you and the staff at BCEA for inviting me to talk about a very exciting area in oncology, as well as other diseases that affect humans, and that is how to augment or modulate the immune system to either attack or to diminish the activity of a variety of different diseases. And that's something that we've been involved with for a number of different years, as you had already mentioned, particularly focusing on cancer vaccines. And I, you know, just want to start off by saying that this whole idea of doing something to the immune system to prevent cancer or prevent recurrence or to treat cancer is not a novel concept. It's something that's become exciting in the last several years only because we've come to a better understanding of how to modify the immune system with vaccines and other types of strategies. And I'll talk more about that as we move through the presentation today. And first of all, I'd just like to disclose some conflicts of interest, which is important here because I do a lot of work with vaccine companies that have licensed or in the process of licensing my technology from the Mayo Clinic. And so I think that's important to point that out, that we're working very early with small biotech companies to advance the strategies that we develop in the laboratory and through clinical trials as early as possible into industry, so that if these have an impact on breast cancer, they will be at least on the way to commercialization through licensing from the Mayo Clinic. So let me just start off with trying to develop an understanding of the immune system. And a lot of the slides as we move through here, we'll talk about some data, but we also talk a lot about generalities with respect to how we apply modulators of the immune system to the treatment and prevention of diseases, and particularly focusing on cancer here, but with a lot of references to how we apply to other diseases, such as infectious diseases as well. The immune system is very complex, and that's why it's taken 100 plus years to try to figure out how to best employ to treat decisions. The immune system arises from a stem cell that's in your bone marrow, and this bone marrow gives rise to two different types of progenitor cells or stem-like cells called either the lymphoid stem cell or the myeloid progenitor cell. The lymphoid stem cell gives rise to lymphocytes, B cells and T cells, and many of you have probably already heard of those. And the myeloid progenitors give rise to a number of other cell types that are very important in protecting us against infection. The myeloid progenitors are not really specific for, any type of microbe or any type of cancer, etc. Rather, they're first responders, and they tend to produce a number of, and you can see in these cells like the neutrophil or the eosinophil or the basophil, that they produce these granules, and these granules can be released when they sense bacteria, and that those granules contain toxic substances that can block bacteria, and they also have an impact in cancer immunobiology as well. The myeloid progenitor also gives rise to a couple of very important cells, the dendritic cells and macrophages, which is shown on the bottom right-hand side of that slide. These cells are very important for engulfing tumor cells and presenting them to the other side of the immune system, which is the adaptive immune response, which is comes from these lymphoid stem cells, which is on the left side of the screen. They give rise to a couple of different cell types, as I had mentioned, the B cell and the T cell. Now, the B cell, as some of you may already know, gives rise to what's called plasma cells, and these produce antibodies. And so when many vaccines, for example, induce B cells to produce antibodies, so for example, the tetanus vaccine, tetanus is a very potent toxin, and you want to be instantly protected against that should it start being produced by the microbe Clostridium tetani that produces it in your body. And these antibodies circulate in the blood. An antibody that we use for treatment of cancer, Herceptin, is derived from our understanding of antibody biology. But also, in addition to antibodies, the adaptive immune system consists of what we like to target in cancer vaccines and other types of immune-based approaches for the treatment of cancer. And that's called the T-cell. So that's that middle panel. There's a T-cell progenitor, and then there's a couple of different types of T-cells, which I'll get further into, helper T-cells and cytotoxic T-cells. It's actually much broader than that, but this is a very simplified overview of the immune system that really imparts the complexity of the immune system and also imparts this idea that it's vast and has many different features and faces that can protect us from a number of different microorganisms as well as cancers. And there's data in the literature now that clearly show, both in humans and animal models, that one of the key characteristics or functions of the immune system is to protect against the development of cancer or aberrant tissues. And so your immune system becomes tolerant to what is healthy, normal functioning tissue in your body, and in many cases can develop a mountain immune response against cancers. Now, sometimes that's ineffective because cancers outgrow the immune system by essentially throwing up shields that prevent full activation of the immune response, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. The most important component to think about with respect to why is it that we can target the immune system is because the adaptive immune system is the body's drug-making machinery. There's no other better drug-making machinery than the body's natural immune system. As I had mentioned, there's T cells and B cells. And so if you look at a teaspoon of blood, you have 12 million unique T and B cells per teaspoon of that blood. And what I mean by unique is that they each can recognize something that's different. For example, something that's on the surface of a cancer cell, something that is on the surface of a bacteria or a virus. And that's very important because now you have all of these. And in fact, if you look at the ability or capabilities of different types of drugs, what we see is that the T cells can, the number of different types of T cells that get produced in the body is on the order of like 10 to the 18th. So that's, you know, essentially almost an indescribable number in terms of the different specificity. So each T cell that's in your blood is different than the other T cell. And that's through genetic recombination. And so each T cell, and let me talk a little bit about the biology of T cells. So T cells, as shown here on the left-hand side, T lymphocytes, recognize foreign proteins, for example, that's what's called peptide and MHC, on a cell here through this special protein called the T-cell receptor, which is a partner of two proteins on the cell surface of the T-cell receptor. And those partnering proteins are actually made through genetic recombination from many different cassettes. So if you go over to the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see that there's many different red boxes that the T cell can choose from. And so we have many different red boxes, we have many different yellow boxes, and those come together in different ways to give us this, you know, large repertoire of cells that can recognize many, many different molecules. And so an individual molecule, for example, like tamoxifen, can recognize the estrogen receptor. So we have T cells in the blood that actually can recognize the estrogen receptor, but we also have T cells that can recognize, proteins on microbes or proteins on viruses and eradicate those particular diseases. Now, that's just the T cells. So remember that there's also B cells, and B cells in much the same way produce antibodies that have all kinds of different specificities. And when we talk about vaccines, for example, I think one of the interesting attributes is that we have developed about 41 vaccines to treat about 27 diseases, which are now preventable, 27 microbial diseases, which are preventable. We haven't even, touched the surface in terms of what we can do with preventing infectious diseases. There's so many more diseases that we can prevent with infectious diseases. Of course, the ones that we protect against are ones that easily and readily impact human health care in the population, such as polio or influenza. But the immune system produces, through genetic recombination, a vast array of different proteins that can recognize specifically microbial proteins, cancer proteins, other types of proteins that are in the environment. So this complexity enables us to develop strategies that we can specifically target cancer proteins that are aberrantly expressed by the cancers and that really make the cancers look different than normal tissue. So the innate versus adaptive immune response, one of the key components of the innate immune response, which is the neutrophils and eosinophils and basophils that I talked about, is that it's very rapid. And so as a tumor develops, these may play a role in the rapid elimination of the tumor cell and the rapid elimination of the infection. And what makes the adaptive immune system unique is that it takes a while to develop. So think about it. There's 12 million T cells per teaspoon of blood. And one of those T cells may recognize the tumor. And it's got to find that tumor. And it's got to, once it interacts with that tumor, it's got to expand. It's got to clonal, what we call clonally expand. So it's got to reproduce copies and copies and copies of itself so that it reaches a certain number of T cells that can have an impact on the disease. And this takes time. And so oftentimes infections or cancers can outpace the adaptive immune system because of its slow development and escape the impact of either the antibodies or the T cell responses against it. And so that's one of the things that we try to target with vaccines is we try to eliminate that slow development. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But in addition to T cells and B cells and these unique proteins that they produce on the cell surface that give them, you know, this exquisite specificity, there's also different types of T cells. So now that you can see that the immune system is compounding itself with multiple specificities, because if you think about it, the immune system is there to protect against a fungus. It's there to protect against viruses. It's there to protect against bacteria and other types of infections. So it's very important that in addition to that specificity that occurs through rearranging genes within the B cells and within the T cells, that there's also different flavors of cells that have developed through evolutionary processes that enable the immune system to deal with all kinds of different insults, you know, cancer, viruses, bacteria. So, for example, you'll hear a lot about cytotoxic T cells or CD8 T cells. So when a virus infects a cell or when a cancer develops and is presenting some abnormal proteins, cytotoxic T cells can actually recognize those cells because they display certain peptides or certain proteins or fragments of proteins on the cell surface that are recognized. And the CD8 cytotoxic T cells on the far left-hand side are often called CTL, can recognize specifically those proteins. And they can release a number of different cytotoxic substances directly into the tumor microenvironment or infection microenvironment. And that'll result in what we call induction of apoptosis, so cell death. So one of the things that we rely on with the developments of immune-based approaches for cancer and other diseases is the ability to activate CD8 cytotoxic T cells that can travel to the tumor site and release all of these in a very, very specific fashion. These cytotoxic substances that can induce cell killing. And in fact, a lot of the successes that we have in melanoma and lung cancer with the use of what we call checkpoint blockade relies on the ability to activate these cells. There's also another group of cells which are called helper T cells, and that's the middle four T cells. And so there's different flavors of these helper T cells, and the reason is because these have different properties with respect to what they can attack. And so these cells activate other components of the immune system. They're very responsive to very low levels of antigen, and antigens, what I mean by that, is something that looks foreign to the immune system. And they can become activated very quickly and elaborate or produce, rather, a number of different molecules that can further activate the immune system. So, for example, we have what are called Th1 helper T cells. And these activate B cells for antibody production. And this may be important for a number of different infections in which antibodies are quite effective. Then there's called Th2 cells. And they also provide for a different class of antibodies. There's multiple different kinds of antibodies, which is a part of the complex layering of the immune system. But these are important, for example, for parasites rather than fungus. And so, and then so on and so on, these other subsets of T cells, generally apply to different types of infections. And so one of the critical features in terms of our understanding of the immune system is how can we generate immune responses using pharmacologic approaches such as vaccines to generate different T cells that may have different impacts on the cancer. So layered on top of the T cell receptor or the antibodies in terms of their complexities are these different layers of types of T cell responses. And similarly with B cells, there's different types of B cells as well. Then
so,
there's another. Yeah,
so
go ahead.
Can I stop you there? We did have a question come in.
Okay.
And I apologize for any butchering of any names here, but the question was, are monoclonal antibodies like XGEVA, it's XGEVA, similar to immunotherapy?
That's right. And so these monoclonal antibodies that are being developed, and we see commercials every day, these drugs typically their names end in MAB. You'll see that. So they have like a generic name that ends in MAB, which means monoclonal antibodies. So those monoclonal antibodies are the same antibodies that are produced in your body. And they've been isolated genetically. And they've been put into bacteria, they've been put into yeast, so that these microorganisms can produce large amounts of these antibodies. And then the antibodies are produced, and so they have a certain specificity. So, for example, and I'll talk more about this one, there is Herceptin. Herceptin is a monoclonal antibody that recognizes HER2-new, which is on a subset of breast cancers, 10 to 20%. So that's very effective for those diseases because that antibody binds and induces immune responses, and I'll get more into that. But there's also monoclonal antibodies that, recognize other molecules that can alter the function of the immune system, and I'll talk more about those. But monoclonal antibodies are one specific antibody that was derived from the immune response that has been subsequently isolated in terms of, that genetic component of it, and it's expressed and purified and put into vials that can be delivered therapeutically to individuals with a variety of different kinds of diseases. So we can come back to that if that didn't fully answer your question. But in addition to the complexity, due to the specificity of the antibody responses, due to the number of different types of different T cells or B cells that we can develop, there's also a number of different switchboard. And so this next slide is complex, but there's a number of different molecules on T cells that can interact with tumor cells that can determine the type of immune response too. And so some of these molecules can actually shut off the immune response. We'll talk a little bit more about that. For example, some of you may have heard of checkpoint blockade or anti-PD-1. Jimmy Carter, for example, had a melanoma that had metastasized to his brain. I think there was 3 or 4 little melanoma spots on his brain. And he was treated with an antibody to, which is at the very top there, to PD-1, which is kind of shown in a purple there. And that blocked the interaction between what we call B7H1 or PD-L1, which is another name. And that's actually an interaction that suppresses T-cell immunity. So by blocking that, he actually developed a stronger immune response against his cancer. And that stronger immune response was sufficient so that it could go traffic into the brain where the tumor was, and that could actually kill that tumor very specifically. And as a result of that, President Carter had a complete response to therapy and is no longer burdened by these metastases in his brain. And that's something that we want to apply to breast cancer as well, and we continue to learn. But there are some caveats because melanoma is different than breast cancer, and so we need to keep in mind the biologic differences between these diseases as we apply the immune-based therapy. So keep in mind that there's also this switchboard in terms of turning on and off the immune system, which is very important and adds another layer of complexity. But we've only discovered these molecules within the last 10 years and are now developing therapies that can allow us to either upregulate or downregulate the immune response. And go ahead.
So there is one other question that came through, and it's for triple negative breast cancer, where there is no known protein receptors. How can vaccines or immune therapies help there?
Right. So there's a couple of different ways, and I'm going to talk about one of those that we have recently developed. So there's no known I wouldn't say that there's no known receptors that distinguish triple-negative breast cancer. We have no targeted therapies for breast cancer, or triple-negative breast cancer. So as triple-negative breast cancer is diagnosed, these patients go on to surgical removal of the tumor, followed by standard cytotoxic chemotherapy, because we don't have any targeted therapy that recognizes specifically molecules that are associated with triple negative breast cancer. And so I'll come back to that. And in fact, this is a good slide for moving into specific types of immune-based approaches that target triple negative breast cancer, as well as other ones, other subsets of breast cancer as well. So we've known for many, many years that the body's own immune system can attack triple-negative breast cancer, can attack melanoma, can attack estrogen receptor-positive breast cancer, HER2-positive breast cancer, because what we see, and this is what we call a Kaplan-Meier curve on this slide, what we see is those individuals that, when they're diagnosed with triple-negative breast cancer in this particular slide, that have an existing immune response actually have better outcome. So their immune system is trying to fight this disease. And then there are individuals which apparently don't generate an immune response for whatever reason. We're still trying to figure that out, that have poor outcome. And so this is really telling us in this slide is that we need to boost the immune response in these individuals so that we can get better outcomes and even prevent the disease from recurring. And as you know, many breast cancers, or the vast majority of them, can be surgically removed and treated. And the problem comes when you develop recurrence, because this is usually a resistant disease, and it's usually metastatic, which is the major cause of mortality, of course, in breast cancer. So we know that we know that it's important to generate immune responses against triple negative breast cancer, ER, HER2 positive breast cancer, and we can do this in a number of different ways. And that's what I'm going to point out. Now, not all of these are equally applied to the treatment of breast cancer, but are making their way into the treatment of breast cancer based on success stories that we've had in a variety of other types of cancer. So, for example, checkpoint blockade, which I just mentioned with President Carter, had been used for the treatment of his melanoma. And many of the early studies were done in melanoma with checkpoint blockade, and the success of that has really, you know, excited the clinical community, breast cancer community, in terms of, you know, identifying whether or not this would be an appropriate strategy for treating breast cancer as well. And I'll get into that. So there's a number of different ways. There's cancer vaccines, monoclonal antibodies, which is already talked about, which is you know, something that has been a real success for HER2 positive breast cancer, as well as a number of other different types of cancer, such as lymphoma with, for example, rituximab. And adoptive T cell therapy, that's an interesting strategy that removes part of your immune system and stimulates it in cell culture dishes and puts it back in you. And then, as I had already mentioned, checkpoint blockade inhibitors, which is an approach. So let me just start with this idea of vaccines as, you know, just an example of some of the approaches that are developed with respect to vaccines. So vaccines, as you know, protect against infectious diseases. There's actually two vaccines that are designed to prevent cancer in individuals. Of course, these are cancers that are based on viruses. And the first one is the hepatitis B virus, which I think back in 1984 a vaccine was developed. And that actually prevents liver cancer. And more recently, as most of you know, is the development of a vaccine that targets the human papillomavirus, or multiple strains of the human papillomavirus. And that's responsible for a wide variety of cancers, namely cervical cancer, but also cancers of the throat and other parts of the reproductive tract as well. And so now vaccine, so I talked about this issue of the adaptive immune response takes a long time, and oftentimes infections, tumors can outwit the immune response because it takes so long, and so they can rapidly adapt to it. So, for example, if you get hit with polio, you do generate an immune response against it, but in those individuals that go on to develop polio, their immune system is insufficient to wrangle in the infection. And that's due to the fact that the virus has a number of different shields that it can throw up. Is there a question? Okay. So what vaccines are designed to do is, as shown in this figure, they're designed to mimic the primary immune response, which is slow and doesn't get up there very high. And so you can see here there's a secondary immune response. So if you're exposed, such as to polio or to a vaccine, you get a slow, moderated immune response. But then if you're ever exposed to that again, it's a very rapid, surefire response that occurs within a matter of a few days. And that's what we try to achieve with vaccine. So if you develop breast cancer, for example, and you have that removed, you might develop a small immune response, the primary immune response. You may not. In many individuals, they don't, because that cancer throws up those shields and prevents it. What we try to do with vaccines is stimulate an immune response so that if the cancer ever tries to come back, you'll have T cells, you'll have antibodies that can recognize and destroy the tumor. And I went the wrong way there. So there's a number of different ways that we can do that. And I use this term neoantigen, and you may see that in mainstream literature. And what that means is new proteins or you know, new ways that the protein is presented on the tumor cells that the immune system can recognize. And so there's a number of different ways. And so the first thing we think about with a cancer vaccine is there's some kind of microbe that is microbial neoantigens or proteins are actually very immunogenic, so can stimulate very powerfully the immune response. And so it's nice to target those, and certainly with human papillomavirus and the hepatitis B virus, we do have those capabilities. But in breast cancer, there's just not a lot of evidence that there's any involvements of bacteria or there's any involvements of viruses. And so we need to think of other ways if we're going to use vaccines. So one of the ways is, and I'll get that on the next slide, is that, you know, maybe there's a lot of mutations in these proteins in triple-negative breast cancer, HER2-positive breast cancer. And when you get mutations, the immune system can recognize those as being completely foreign. It's never seen those before. Unfortunately, with breast cancer, we don't have a lot of those. However, there's other ones, and I'm not going to go into all of these different types of complex antigens or proteins that stimulate the immune system because of the complexity. But go down to the bottom, and there's one that's called non-mutated self-antigens. And so, and I'll talk a little bit about the science behind that because I think that's important, and that's where a lot of the development of vaccines is going forward for breast cancer and other types of cancer as well. It's a complex biology, and I'll try my best to elaborate that on. But so here's an example of somatic mutations. So I just wanted to point this out. There was a publication a few years back which looks at the level of mutations. And that's kind of, so the higher those dots are on that plot, the more mutations. And so if you go over to the far right-hand side, melanoma, lung cancer, you know, those have a lot of mutations. You've got the sun beating down on your skin. It's interacting with the DNA. It's causing a lot of problems. Lung cancer, particularly those that's associated with smoking, that generates a lot of mutations. And so those are things that we can target in those diseases. And indeed, we've been developing strategies. But then you go to, it's not even quite in the middle. It's breast cancer, which shows up more on the left-hand side. This is saying that breast cancer on average has, you know, less than one mutation per million pieces of DNA. And so that's important. Whereas melanoma may have 10 or 100 per million, in breast cancer we're not seeing that level of mutation that we can target. And so we have to target what we call overexpressed self proteins. And so so think about HER2-NU in this particular case, and I'll get back to triple negative breast cancer. But a normal cell would express a protein, and most of and that protein is chopped up, and that's the left-hand side there. And part of that protein would be presented. You can see the green boxes on the cell surface of the tumor. And your immune system knows that's normal. So it sees all those green ones, and it says, okay, well, that's normal. But when a tumor cell overproduces a protein like HER2-NU, then what we start seeing is these red boxes being presented on the outside of tumor cells. And your body's immune system recognizes that as foreign. And that's what we're targeting with what we call overexpressed non-mutated neoantigens. And we can identify what those proteins or fragments of proteins, what we call peptides, are by looking at patients that develop cancer. And this is actually some studies that we had done where we looked at the folate receptor alpha. This is an important target in triple-negative breast cancer. And the ones that have red boxes around them are fragments of this folate receptor alpha that patients are developing immune responses to. So it's only a fraction of patients, but it's enough information that we can see which parts of this protein, the folate receptor alpha, the immune system sees as foreign, then we can develop that into vaccines. And in fact, we just finished an early phase 1 clinical trial in breast and or ovarian cancer in which we targeted the folate receptor alpha. And we came up with a number of different fragments of the folate receptor alpha, which are shown as on the far right bottom, FR76, FR30, FR56. These are small fragments of proteins. And these are what the immune system recognizes, and we formulate those into vaccines. And we carry out phase 1 clinical trials to try to understand the safety, basically, whether it's immunogenic. And our interest is, of course, to been to apply vaccines to either ovarian cancer or breast cancer by immunizing when disease is very low. Because we don't use vaccines to treat polio. We don't use vaccines to treat flu. We don't use vaccines to treat measles. We use vaccines to prevent those diseases, and in much the same way, we hope that we can prevent diseases with the use of vaccines alone, such as the recurrence of triple-negative breast cancer, HER2-positive breast cancer. And ultimately, we would like to move this strategy into preventing breast cancer from occurring altogether. In fact, recent awards that we've received from foundations such as the Komen Foundation and the National Breast Cancer Coalition were able to start thinking about how we can use the approaches that we use to actually prevent the disease from occurring in the first place. And this graph is very complex, and each dot represents a unique patient. White is pre-vaccine, and yellow is post-vaccine. And you can see here that we can immunize these individuals and stimulate immune responses in these individuals. So it's quite possible, despite the fact that this is a non-mutated protein that's produced by your cancer, that we can generate immune responses. In fact, triple-negative breast cancer, we have just recently received a grant that triple-negative breast cancer expresses folate receptor alpha, which is shown in the bottom middle brown circles there, as opposed to HER2-positive breast cancer, which only a fraction of those do, and estrogen receptor don't express much folate receptor. So we do know targets in triple-negative breast cancer, and in fact, that phase one clinical trial led to our getting a grant that will enable us to determine whether or not we can vaccinate to prevent triple-negative breast cancer from recurring in individuals. They're treated with surgery, they're treated with chemotherapy, they're sent home. But what can we be doing to augment their immune system to keep a close eye on redevelopment? We can do that with vaccines. And so this vaccine will use after conventional therapy in patients with stages 2B and stage 3. And after they've been treated to no evidence of disease, but are at high risk for recurrence, then we'll vaccinate individuals. We'll also have a placebo control because that's how we can answer the question as to whether or not the vaccine works. So our use of vaccines, and I think most would agree now, is to use vaccines when used alone to prevent disease recurrence, ultimately thinking about whether or not we can actually prevent the disease from occurring in the first place. Now, we continue to study, and this is complex, because there are going to be cases where the cancers can evade or throw up shields or block what we're trying to do with vaccines. And so we continue to study developing new vaccines or identifying new targets. So, for example, some of you may have heard this story of breast cancer stem cells. And, in fact, actually this emerges from studies in which we see different types of cells or heterogeneous population of cells in the tumor. And so the graph on the right-hand side shows that we can develop vaccines that target multiple cell types within the tumor, and that can actually lead to regression. So there may be opportunities to further enhance our vaccines. So, for example, if we see some protection from the folate vaccine but not complete protection in individuals, we may be able to combine two vaccines to come up with better protection in those individuals. Now, similarly, we have opportunities to capitalize on the success for monoclonal antibodies. And this is complex. Monoclonal antibodies have a number of different functions. They stimulate the immune system. And what we've recently shown, which is on the next slide, is that the immune system actually is important in protecting individuals from progression in metastatic breast cancer. So this is HER2-new. And as you can see with the red lines there, patients that develop immune responses as a result of being treated with trastuzumab or Herceptin actually are the ones that have better outcomes. So trastuzumab stimulates your body's immune response, and how can we capitalize on that to further protect individuals with HER2-new metastatic breast cancer? And so one of the things that we're developing is a combination approach, and we're vaccinating in parallel with Herceptin and another drug called pertuzumab, which is very similar, to further enhance the activity and prolong individuals' lives that have been diagnosed with HER2-new positive breast cancer. Now, we haven't seen much activity with adoptive T-cell therapy, but there is some activity with breast cancer, but certainly with a number of other cancers, in which cancer is removed, T-cells, which is shown on the right-hand or the left-hand side, and tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes are isolated from those tumors, and they're grown rapidly in culture. Sometimes it takes a long time. Rapidly may not be the appropriate term, and then they're given back to the individual in hopes that we can those immune cells that are stimulated in the culture dish can actually traffic or move to tumor sites and kill. And there are ways now that they're improving our capabilities with adoptive T cell therapy. And now with without going into too much detail in this slide, we can actually create our own T cell receptors. There's first generation, second generation, third generation, and actually use transfection techniques with viruses to take your T cells out, modify them, and put them back so they recognize tumor. We haven't really used this approach much in it's a very complex, labor-intensive approach, but there may be some application to metastatic disease. And so in the coming years, you'll see information about adoptive T-cell therapy with what's called CAR T-cells or genetically engineered T-cells that perhaps will have an impact and be able to shrink metastatic lesions in individuals. But perhaps the most exciting area, as I wrap up the next couple of the talk with the next couple of slides here, is immune checkpoint blockade. Now, remember, I talked about President Carter, and I talked about this switchboard. So you've got T cells, and they produce a number of different molecules. So you can see they're buried in the T cell. There's the T cell receptor, but there's all these other molecules like PD-1 or PD-L1 or CD40, and some of these turn on the T cell and some of them turn off the T cell. Well, it turns out that we know some of those that turn off the T cell, and PD-1 is an example, or CTLA-4 is ipilimumab, for example, which is used to treat a variety of cancers, is an antibody that blocks CTLA-4, which is kind of on in the center left on the T-cell, which is a molecule which suppresses T-cell responses. This is an exciting area because we've developed monoclonal antibodies which can prevent those molecules from interacting and shutting off T-cell responses. Very fascinating time in immunobiology for treatment of a variety of different kinds of cancers. So it's the checkpoint blockade revolution. And you can see on the right-hand side here, we have anti-PD-1 antibodies, which block PD-1, PD-L1 interactions. And we have anti-CTLA-4 antibodies. These are monoclonal antibodies that are specific for CTLA-4 or specific for PD-L1, which can actually block those interactions and help us modify or modulate the immune response. This is an example of an individual treated with melanoma. You can see the power of it. This is great. So this individual didn't respond to anything. He had far left-hand side, you can see a melanoma-removed skin graft that ultimately recurred at the margin of the tumor, and you can see that it consumed his eye and a variety of tissue around there. Not responsive to anything, and he was treated with this anti-PD-1, same one that President Carter was treated with, and you can see after just a few weeks, three cycles, that tumor completely shrank, and in many cases in melanoma, this is curative for these individuals, and so this restores their life for something that was ultimately going to kill them. Now, we've started to apply this to triple-negative breast cancer, and so there's trials ongoing now, and so this is antibodies that recognize PD-1, and this is a waterfall plot, and so each bar represents a unique patient, And if the bar is going up, that means that their tumor kept on growing. But you can see that a number of these patients that had metastatic triple-negative breast cancer, that when we used anti-PD-1, and this is after everything else failed, all the cytotoxic chemotherapies, that we actually got shrinkage. Now, it's not as impressive for as it is in melanoma in many cases or non-small cell lung cancer, but nonetheless, it's telling us that we have the capabilities now to modulate the immune system. So we're continuing to improve. Just the last slide here before I go into the acknowledgments, we continue to improve how to apply the checkpoint blockade. And one of the things that we're seeing now is that, this is a complex graph, but on the right-hand side you can see that tumors are growing and that there's one particular group of animals that are treated with anti-PD-1 plus this vaccine C3, L3, N1, in which about 75% of the tumors underwent complete regression, and these animals survived very long term, and the cancers that outgrew or that escaped this immune response were very slow and indolent. So we're hoping that the checkpoint blockade revolution, along with, for example, vaccines, will help us develop critical combination approaches which can lead to complete cures in individuals. So I just want to end there. You know, all of this work that we've done with vaccines and modeling of different types of complex combination approaches that we're performing in humans with breast and ovarian cancer now take a lot of work and take a lot of funding. And so we're thankful to a number of different organizations, such as the NIH, Komen, the Department of Defense, the National Breast Cancer Coalition, and other local foundations for providing support. And with that, I'll end, and we can take some questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. What fascinating, exciting information. We really appreciate you being available and here with us today to answer, give us this information and answer questions. So one of the questions that I do have is, how does one go about finding about clinical trials or what clinical trials there are that deal with the vaccines that are available?
Yeah. So there is clinical trial website, and it continues to become to improve and used more and more, but that's called clinicaltrials.gov. So it's all one word, clinicaltrials.gov. And if you go to that website, you'll come up to a screen that allows you to search, and so you can plug in breast cancer and vaccines. And that's going to pull up a number of different clinical trials, and that's going to give you information and information that you, as you know, non-scientists can try to understand. For example, what the mechanism is, what type of disease. So, for example, some are in metastatic patients, and some are in the prevention setting. And then it has contact information to contact the appropriate individuals. And so clinicaltrials.gov is a national or federally funded website that allows you to search for clinical trials.
Excellent. Yep. That's great information. And then another question is, what are the side effects of vaccines and other immune-based therapies?
Yeah, so that's very important. So vaccines have... there's very little side effects in general with infectious disease vaccines. You have heard stories about this and that and autism. That's not true. So vaccines in general have very little side effects because of that exquisite specificity that I was telling you about very early on in the webinar. By stimulating these T cells or B cells that are very specific, they only attack the tumor. Now, so we don't see any impact generally, any type of safety problems with vaccines. That's because they're very specific. The usual side effects that you see, many of you probably have gotten flu vaccine and you feel like crud the next day. You have you know, some pain at the site. Yeah, I mean, we see those types of, you know, you're stimulating the immune response, and that's going to have some slight, you know, side effects associated with that. Now, with checkpoint blockade, it's a little bit different. Okay, so checkpoint blockade is nonspecific. So it's going to block nonspecifically the development of an immune response. And so if you have T cells in your body that recognize, other tissues or other organs, there's the potential for developing autoimmunity. And so we continue to try to understand that and use those in appropriate settings, for example, metastatic disease, and watch closely if there's any evidence. And so there are some individuals which develop autoimmune disease as a result of being treated with checkpoint blockade, and they have to come off of that. But we can continue to understand the biology of that, and we actually now have ways of preventing those autoimmune diseases from occurring, because tumors tend to be more immunogenic than the normal healthy tissues. And so by kind of, you know, escalating or de-escalating the doses or the types of approach, we can minimize the side effects of these more non-specific approaches like checkpoint blockade. Yep, good question.
Well, thank you so much. Again, just really fascinating, exciting information, and just gracious thanks to Dr. Keith Knutson and to everyone who joined us today. Again, please share what you learned today via our social media channels, and please plan to join us for the next webinar in May and our annual conference on Saturday, October 7th.